You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you guys have been having a great week. I most certainly have. This Vox and Hops episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is one of Montreal's premier metal promoters. When there isn't a crippling global pandemic, they normally put on a bunch of sick metal shows throughout the year here in Montreal. But not only that, they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals. And when I say that, trust me, it's the truth, because I have played just about every metal festival out there, and Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. I am super, super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops podcast. Today's episode is absolutely one for the books, because it is with a guest who I started listening to when I started attempting harsh vocals. He was one of the first people that I tried to imitate. So this is a very cool moment for me to be able to sit down and have a chat with him. Get ready, people. This is Vox and Hops episode number 214 with Jesse Leach of Killswitch Engage, Times of Grace, and The Weapon.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today, I'm with Jesse Leach, the vocalist of Killswitch Engage and Times of Grace. I am super, super stoked to be with you because I have been a fan for a very, very, very long time. And it's just cool. I'm stoked. So super easy yet fun yet complex question I like to throw at people right at the beginning is, how have you been coping with this glorious year of 2020?
Oh, man. It's, that's a good question. I'm doing the best I can, honestly. You know, I just try to keep things in perspective that, you know, I've got it pretty good. It's been hard, but I know there's a lot of people that got a lot worse than I do. So I try to stay positive with that in mind. But there are days where I don't want to get out of bed, for sure. And I would just binge watch and depressed, for sure. But on the whole, I'm doing okay, man.
Awesome. Me too as well. At the beginning, I was very depressed. But then I just started just hitting the ground running with the podcast, just trying to...
That's great. Yeah. I'm getting my shit together with some stuff as well. Not a podcast, but just trying to stay active and creative and, you know, feel like I'm doing something that matters.
Which is, it's something that we do when we're on the road. We're very involved in people's lives and spreading a lot of positivity. And that's something that Killswitch has always done, just being a very positive forward band.
Yeah, we're fortunate to be able to keep doing what we're doing and have the fan base that we do. And it's, I count my blessings daily with that stuff, you know. And I'd have to say back at you, I remember hearing Whisper Supremacy when I was younger. And me and my fellow bandmates sitting in front of the CD player with our jaws on the ground. So much respect to you as well.
Very
dude.
Cool.
You definitely blazed a brutal and amazing technical trail in metal and game changer for sure. That record especially.
Absolutely. And I agree with you with that. Mike DeSalvo's vocals on it are just so aggressive, like a hungry bulldog. I love it. Let's dance into craft beer because we have to, because it's Vox and Hops. Tell me about your very, very first beer. Do you remember the first beer that you ever drank, Jesse?
I think it was a Michelob and it was warm. I stole it from my dad's stash and it was horrible and I hated it. But I don't know. I kept sneaking them.
Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends and talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What beer do you have on your side there that you'd like to share with me today?
So I've got two. I wanted to get a new one to try. This is Steadfast Pale Ale and it's out of New York, which is where I live. So it's kind of a local thing. And then one of my favorite gluten-free beers, and by the way, these are both gluten-free because I can't drink gluten anymore, is a company called Ghost Fish Brewing Company. It's a grapefruit IPA, and this is about the closest you get to like an actual good-tasting gluten-free beer from the States. And this one is from Seattle, Washington. I love this company. They're awesome.
I have absolutely gone there, actually, because it's around the corner from that venue in Seattle. I can't remember the name, in the middle of nowhere, but me being a craft beer nerd, I hunted out all the closest craft beer places, and it was super close to that venue in Seattle. I wish I remember the name. It's that classic one
right on
where
El Corazon,
exactly.
Maybe?
No, I think you're right. No. Yeah. On my side, I'm drinking a homebrew. which is something that I've never done on the podcast. I've enjoyed a few of these. This is actually from a Vox and Hops head, someone that comes to my Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, the great Stefan Dels, and he is also a podcaster. He's got a great podcast called Podcrastination that is actually just celebrating his...
Clever.
It's actually celebrated his 10th anniversary recently, and if he was here, he'd say, well, I haven't been active the whole time, but, you know, it is called Podcrastination after all. So I'm going to crack this. This is a wit-style Saison. It clocks in at 4.7%, also gluten-free. So let's dance to this. Tell me all about being gluten-free and when you discovered it, and because I've never spoken to anybody about this, so I'm very curious about what happens and what it feels like and everything about that.
Ooh. Well, first of all, I'll say that this Steadfast is actually delicious. It's good. It doesn't blow my face off, but it's a really good beer. Tastes like a pale ale. Crazy. You never know. And I like, for me, with gluten-free, it's the sorghum beers I really tend to like a lot. So gluten-free is difficult. I grew up in a predominantly, I mean, I'm a mutt, but my family was predominantly eating Italian food, so I grew up with pasta, pizza, and then obviously my teenage years, I loved certain types of beer. And then I hit, you know, my late 30s, pushing into 40s, and my body started to just reject beer. First of all, I noticed for sure, you know, the next day I would totally get the shits and like just not feel good. And it turned into cramping. And then, you know, long story short, I went to about 4 or 5 doctors. I thought I was dying.
Really?
I kept getting rashes. I was getting canker sores, just bloated. My body was like not stoked. And after about 4 or 5 doctors, I went to this Ayurvedic natural holistic doctor guy. And, you know, everyone else wanted to do surgery. They wanted to shove things up my butt. They just wanted to do all the things that Western medicine does. And this guy, he just kind of took my pulse and touched like and was like, hey, try giving a gluten-free diet a shot for 3 or 4 days, then come back and talk to me. And sure enough, by day 2, I was flushing out, and I just, my energy level started to return. And then he told me, he's like, look, you know, this may not be a gluten thing, because a lot of the times, especially here in the States, we got glyphosate all over our wheat, and that's essentially a poison that they can use in battlefield.
Wow.
It's a terrible poison that they put all over our wheat products and in our fields. So any contact with that causes all the reactions that I had. So that just got me to stop it altogether.
Wow.
And I lost a ton of weight. I lost some muscle mass, but I feel great. I have much better energy. So it's difficult because, you know, all the cool things that I love, like beer and pizza, for example, are like my 2 favorite things were. It's changed a lot because gluten-free, for the most part, just doesn't hit the mark with bread and crust and stuff like that. So I'm more of a Mexican food guy now.
Stick to the corn.
Yeah, totally.
I would be very sad if I couldn't indulge.
Yeah, can you imagine not being able to drink beer anymore, dude?
From that Michelob, take me to the first beer that you did enjoy.
Funny enough, and it's gross, but, you know, I was young. I was like 16. I loved Colt 45 malt liquor, man. So that was the first beer that I actually would go out of my way to get. You know, and then it went, you know, party beers. When you're young, you don't give a shit. But the first beer that really hit me where I was like, oh, is a brew house out of Providence, Rhode Island called Trinity Brew House. And they've won awards for their IPA. It's decent. But one summer, the brewmaster put out a beer called a Caribbean Stout, which was like a chocolate Caribbean Stout. And I want to say it was 8 or 9%. It'll definitely knock you on your ass. But it was just so good. It was tasty. Like, I couldn't get enough of it. And I was just going to that place like every other day just to get that before it ran out. And I'd say on a bigger, more commercial level was probably Dogfish Head IPA, because at the time that was kind of the only real like craft beer. I mean, we're talking many, many years ago, late 90s, you know, into the early 2000s. So I'd have to, my hat's off to Trinity Brewhouse, and then Dogfish Head IPA, the 16-minute and the 90-minute IPA were kind of my first like real beers outside of, you know, the major mainstream stuff.
Very cool. Very cool. I want to give a shout out to Stefan for this homebrew. It's absolutely delicious. It's got like a little sweet tang to it. Just super crushable. Nice little wit saison that's still fermenting over here, bubbling over.
I love that, man. Homebrew is the best. That's what I should do someday, man. Yeah. I should put my mind to it and start homebrewing. What else am I doing these days? But beer, you know, it's like, especially in the summer when I'm doing yard work here, because I got a decent sized yard at the place I live up here, a lot of trees. There's nothing like cracking a cold beer when you're done with like hard work, or during, you know, when you're sweating, you're covered in leaves and dirt. There's nothing like cracking a cold beer.
It's like finishing that set too. I have such a cathartic moment.
Oh yeah.
Just cracking a nice cold beer after a set. It's so great. And we like look at each other. We all have it together. And it's always a very, very nice moment that I love. I miss
yeah,
that moment.
Yeah, I know that. That is great, yeah. I wish I could share that with my bandmates. We all scatter like roaches because there's a lot of negativity when we get off stage. There's a group of us that critique, which is not me, and then there's a couple of us that are like, hey, good show, and like you're in a good mood. So
really?
Yeah, we'll usually split up.
Really?
Yeah, we usually split up, there's always the guy or two that's like...
Yeah, yeah, well, that's the done. Anytime there's a mistake, my guitarist, he's the producer of the band, he
producers, yeah, producer
he
ears.
Knows
we all know who I'm talking
exactly
about.
What happened and what went wrong. You missed this one thing, and I'm like,
yeah,
okay, but I had fun, right?
Yeah, and the audience was great, and like, knock it off. It's live music. Shit happens.
It should,
but no,
it should
I'm
be
the same
human.
Way.
It should be organic.
It's like you wait all day for that 1 hour, hour and a half. Like the least you can do is like have a good time and be positive about it. Even if it wasn't a perfect show, just shut
especially
up.
Especially now with being at home for so long. I wish that I enjoyed myself more. I wish I wasn't so just locked in and focused on the performance and I actually enjoyed myself out there.
Yeah, it's funny. I had to go through a whole roller coaster with my voice because I had surgery and I had polyps and I was abusing myself. I was partying too much. And prior to that, I always like would get nervous and focus so hardcore on my performance. Then once I got the surgery and went into actual like vocal training, learning how to even speak properly, like all those things, learning techniques that helped me continue to do my screams, because I don't do the Fry technique. I do the full on old school scream. But with the techniques I learned from Melissa Cross, I can do it at a half. Like, I don't have to push as hard because it comes from a different place now. And that was so liberating, not only because, you know, I wasn't damaging my voice, but I didn't really have to focus on it anymore. So I focused more on, like, making eye contact with the audience, like, having fun looking at my band members. So the last, like, I want to say, since our Iron Maiden tour, we opened for Iron Maiden in, was it 2016, 17? Amazing. It's hard to remember. 2018? I don't remember.
The surgery
terrible
was in
memory.
2018.
Oh, this guy knows. All right, so yeah. So that same year is when I actually feel like I finally figured out how to do this. After, like, doing this since I, you know, my first show was when I was 14 years old. I'm 42
wow.
now. So I feel like I finally hit my stride in my 40s, which is hysterical. But you're right, like, being able to be present when you're performing is amazing, and it's a luxury for some people.
It's hard. It's because we're so, especially vocalists. I don't know if I'm speaking as a vocalist. We sort of go into something different to put that show on as an extreme frontman. Something that's deep inside me that comes out, and I sort of have to harness it. And I've spoken to other vocalists, and they don't even remember what happened during the show because they're just focused.
Yeah, because you're navigating the voice, you're making sure it's placed properly, you're making sure, oh, here's that part coming up where I do that long, high scream, like all those things that occupy your brain space. It's funny, too, because, you know, as you know, I'm sure, like, your brain goes to other places, too. Like, the last couple songs, I'm thinking about that pizza in the dressing room or, like, whatever. Like, you know, the video game I want to play in my bunk later, just dumb stuff goes through your mind, but... That's when you're able to kind of like go on autopilot. And that's what I'm really careful of for me personally is like when you're playing the same songs over and over again, trying to not go into autopilot, especially for the ones that we play like every single night, you know, because Killswitch has got those few songs like the Howard Jones era songs that, you know, End of Heartache, My Curse, that we can't not play, you know. So like my brain's just like, oh, this song. But if I stay present and I focus on the audience and I see how much fun they're having, that's kind of like what keeps me present to it.
That's true. It's an excellent point because they're not playing it every night.
Yeah. And these people, you know, I'm reminded like these people got babysitters, you know, got spending their hard-earned money, you know, or whatever. So that's, that definitely stays in the back of my mind, because this music thing isn't about one person. It's not about the band. It's about everybody involved, that reciprocation. And that's the thing I miss most during this quarantine whole like thing, is that seeing people and seeing people enjoy what I do, and then being able to meet them after the show, or like see them at a bar later and have a conversation about music and why it means so much to us. Like, I miss that shit more.
Absolutely. Than absolutely. You brought it up earlier than I wanted to, but, your vocal surgery, I know as a vocalist, I would have been terrified. That whole moment leading up to when you realized that you had to get a surgery, take me through those days being on stage, because I know you guys had to cancel some shows even.
Those shows.
And I know for myself, when I don't feel like I'm 100%, those shows for me are a nightmare. So what was your mindset throughout all of that?
Yeah, you know, for better or for worse, the nightmare was drowned out by alcohol. Mm. That was my way to cope. And it was like that for a while, because what would happen, and I want to say the first time I remember it happening was at the Paramount in LA. We had just played a sold out show and the crowd was incredible. And I, you know, when your energy is like your adrenaline's going, you tend to push, and you're going to be really careful, whether you're a drummer or a vocalist, especially. That push can be really fucking dangerous. And I was pushing. I was feeling it. I was like, this is fucking awesome. I got off stage and I immediately went in the bathroom and I was like, something's not right. Like I felt something off. And it wasn't the usual, like, oh, I'm fatigued. And I hocked a loogie and it was
blood red,
like just blood. I spit blood. And then as I'm in there, they're like, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And then I hocked a dark loogie, like dark, so it was like internal bleed. Like I was not okay, but I carried such guilt from quitting Killswitch in 2002 and then rejoining in 2012. The last thing in the world I want to do is cancel shows, you know, be a burden. So I just wrote it out, and I didn't talk for the next 2 days, and the blood didn't show up. We ended the tour, next tour. So every once in a while this blood would just come up. And I'd pretend like I couldn't see it, or I would just drink tequila and numb it and be like, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. On my days off, I didn't talk to anyone. Like, I was just hyper resting, thinking that I could compensate. And then, yeah, it just got to the point where we're in the studio and I was singing a line from one of the songs on Atonement. And Adam, our producer, was like, dude, you can hit this note. I've heard you hit this note thousands of times. You're not hitting it. You're flat. You're sharp. You're flat. We've been at this for a half hour. This is ridiculous. Something's wrong. And that led me to fly home from San Diego in the studio, cancel the rest of the sessions, and go to my doctor. And the doctor, for the first time in my life, because I've been going to this guy religiously for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And he's like, you got to be careful. And he would put me on prednisone and like fix me up and I would be good. And I would go out for another tour and I'd damage it. So it was was coming. I knew in the back of my mind it was coming. And he looked at me and was like, I've never seen you this bad. This is bad. I want to put you on vocal rest. So pretty much I was on vocal rest for about 3 months in total.
Wow.
I went and I couldn't speak to anyone. I had to carry on a notepad. And when they see that it wasn't healing after a few weeks, they referred me to a surgeon. And he looked at my voice and he's like, your voice looks to me like an 80-year-old's neck skin when they crouch
Jesus
down.
Christ.
Like, it's bad. He's like, I can't even guarantee you that you're going to be able to continue doing what you do. It's that bad. He's like, we can do the surgery, but I can't guarantee you're going to be able to do what you do anymore. And I recommend that you don't do what you do anymore if you continue this shit. So yeah, it was like not being able to talk or vent that experience and then like carrying it with me like a monk, which was very eye-opening. I realized how many people just talk for no fucking reason. And I also realized certain people that I just kind of didn't need to be around anymore. I really went through some shit.
That's horrible.
And I also realized the power of the voice and like what a gift we have to be able to even just tell someone that I love you, you know, like little things like that. So I got on this whole weird monk thing. So when the voice came back, finally, I said my first word and I started my rehabilitation after the surgery. It was like, this is fucking amazing. I can still do this. And that first show back was in Tallinn, Estonia, opening up for Iron Maiden in front of 11,000 people. And I did vibrato for the first time in my career. And I started hitting notes. And I remember Adam, who is one of the guys that complains all the time, was like, dude, you did vibrato. Dude, you did good. Holy shit. You're hitting like these notes that you don't really hit. You weren't sharp. You weren't flat. Like, wow. So that was it. And the rest of the Iron Maiden tour, I was on top of the fucking world. Man.
Wow. It's that that whole moment from when the doctor said, I don't even know if it's going to come back.
Yeah.
That must have been just the worst months.
Yeah, it was definitely hard. But, you know, I got to that point where I was like, you know what? Worst case scenario, I go do bartending. And, you know, I produce people. I just started thinking on that level. Like, what would I do? What are the things I've been putting off? And beer making is actually I'm actually ashamed I haven't even started that. It was either that or distilling, because I love rum and tequila as well. But yeah, it was a journey, man. And now I can, you know, once I'm properly warmed up in show mode, I can go for a good couple hours in the studio and I'm fine. As long as I just do my warm-ups, my warm-downs, I'm like careful of how I do it. I rest, I drink water, I don't party, I don't talk at loud bars. Like, I do all the things now, and I'm so grateful to be able to still do what I do.
You must just cherish it now. Just absolutely love
it. I do. So that's why, like, you know, I even got back into gaming at, you know, the age of like 39. I started playing Zelda Breath of the Wild because it helped me stay in my bunk. So after the show, I would, you know, eat my meal and prop myself up on pillows like a good little singer and drink my water. And I might have a glass of wine or something, to, you know, so I'm not partying on show days. And I play my video game and just get tired and go to bed. And like, and it was such a game changer. I'd wake up the next morning and I don't usually do a ton of sound checks. I started doing sound checks and feeling good about it. And like, it gave me this whole other level of confidence. And yeah, so it's been a couple of years of just being really stoked that I can still do this shit.
Good. I'm so happy on everything that I've heard. Live videos, everything. You're just killing it. Killing it. So, so, so good.
Thanks, man. So forgive me, because I did mention Whisper Supremacy. So at what mark did you come in? When did
I came in Cryptopsy in 2007.
Okay, yeah. Okay, gotcha, yeah. Man.
So the Unspoken King was my first album with Cryptopsy.
That's a great fucking record too, man. All hails.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with the singer thing. You know, people always talk about the band and people will reference songs I didn't write. I'm like, or albums. I'm like, cool. Yeah. I'm glad you take it.
No, but I see Cryptopsy as a, you know, they've written classic albums, you know, and I can say that cause I wasn't on them, but I know that they've influenced many, many, many waves of musicians. So I don't mind whatsoever at all.
Yeah. I'm the same thing with the, you know, Howard just brought this band to a whole other level. And, because of him, I have a career, so I really can't complain either.
I do remember. I do remember when he came in. I was wary at first because I was such a fan of Alive and Just Breathing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're very different. That's crazy because, you know, people compare us all the time, but it's like, that's a really hard comparison because he's such a huge, bold vocalist with a very polished sound, and I'm sort of I've gotten better, but I'm kind of the raspy, you know, hardcore rodent over here, like just spilling my guts with everything I say. So I don't know. It's I respect the legacy, you know, just like you're saying. Like, to me, I'm honored to even be a part of this incredible band, you know, regardless of if it's the type of music I even listen to, which I don't, admittedly. I'm very much more of a hardcore punk sort of, I love grindcore. I love death metal. Like, if you were to ask me, like, my favorite metal bands off the top of my head, I'm like At the Gates, Entombed, you know, Carcass, like, you know, Grave. Like, that's the school of metal that I'm like, like, that's the shit that got me into it. And lately I've been revisiting my roots too. Listening to a lot of old gothic death metal, like Paradise Lost and My Dying Bride and Edge of Sanity. And because of my love and my outward love on social media, people have been recommending me bands. And my recent obsession is a band called Catatonia, which a lot of people told me. I'm like, I can't stop listening to them. They're so fucking good, man.
Yeah, that new record's amazing. Yeah.
But like metalcore and like the genre that we're put in, like, I don't care for it.
Wow.
I legitimately don't care for it. I love to write it. I love to perform it. But there's really the only one band I would say that I can kind of get into that I'm like, ooh, yeah, is 36 Crazy Fist. And the only reason why is I think they're so unique. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're underrated, and like Brock's voice is weird, but I love it. It's just an odd band. But yeah, it's funny when you're in a band in a genre that you're like, meh, I don't really care about the genre.
Well, the touring must be fun. You know, you like the humans that you're touring with, but you're not there for the music of it.
Yeah, it's well, to me, I've always been a message driven person. Like, that's why I still do this shit. Like, honestly, I think the message of unity and love and, you know, all the corny things that I'm known for, I stand by them, and I feel like that's an important thing, especially nowadays with all the division and all the hate. You know, as much as I love negative music, like I Hate God is one of my favorite bands of all time, and that's just like, you know, negative, grimy, like I love it. But like my spirit and what the message I'm here to, like, I think that I'm here to send to people is like, we got to love each other more. There's got to be like change, positivity, sticking together. Like, and I wanted to inject that in metal because it just felt like it was lacking when Killswitch started. It wasn't a really prevalent thing in the metal scene. So
no, just pure, especially coming from a death metal background for myself, just writing just the most gruesome things where if I read it to my wife and she hates it, I know it's good.
Yeah. But that's, you know, but that's why it's good. And mm-hmm. and that's why we love rock and roll and metal, because it shocked and your parents didn't like it. And it's funny because I grew up in a hardcore roots, and my parents were always just like shaking their head. And then, you know, when Killswitch got going and we had our debut record, my parents were like, okay, it's still kind of hardcore. And then my dad started hearing like the positive stuff, and both my parents started to like my band. That was like, oh, that's fucking weird.
No, never mind. My band is lame now.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. But that's when I had a career, so I don't know, dude. It beats bartending.
Well, where did that come from, though? Where did the positivity come from? Where are you just a genuinely positive person?
No, and especially nowadays, I'm definitely a lot grumpier than ever. But I think my upbringing, it's odd because I've really sort of like torn away from how I was raised, and I like to use the word I've deprogrammed myself. But I was raised in a Christian home, and the kind of Christian where like Iron Maiden was banned. Like I couldn't listen to Iron Maiden. That's a
whole
other.
Was it the artwork?
Yeah, and just the Number of the Beast was the record. I have a funny story behind that one too, because I was actually able to talk to Bruce Dickinson about that particular subject. Yeah, and it got back to my dad. So there was a messages exchanged between my dad and Bruce Dickinson, which was awesome. But so I was raised under very strict, you know, and then the 1980s where I grew up, in the Midwest during this time of like discovering music, it was the devil's music, no matter what. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were calling Journey and like Van Halen, like they were just grasping for anything, saying it was devil's music. But that made my brother and I like want to listen to it even more. So, you know, long story short, as my parents grew and as we grew and we forced our personalities and I forced who I was, I discovered who I was, they started to loosen up a bit. And thankfully, my father became a professor for many years at a university, and that sort of really opened his eyes to some of the hypocrisy and the hate speak that comes from a lot of extremist religions. So, yeah, it's ingrained in me as far as the way I was raised, that my parents raised me, which was to love thy neighbor. The whole love thy neighbor thing stuck with me, and it became a way that I try to be. I think kindness is severely underrated as a strength. And I think that I'm kind of a warrior for it now. And I do blame my parents for that. But I also, just from my life experience, you know, growing up in sort of a punk hardcore community, there was a lot of positive influence there with bands like the Bad Brains, the PMA, Positive Mental Attitude. And, you know, I loved the Clash, and the Clash were about social, you know, awareness and social justice. So I kind of latched onto that whole thing through hardcore, and hardcore kind of became my new religion as a teenager. And it was definitely at the altar of, you know, the Bad Brains, Cro-Mags, Sick of It All, very positive, uplifting, like think about it type bands. And that's just kind of where I'm cut from. So I think it's a mixture of my folks and then just hardcore punk ethos that stuck with me.
Very cool. Very cool. I want to talk about Cigar City making a Killswitch beer.
Oh man, that was so good too.
Oh. That's a great, great name too, of course. Alive or Just Brewing, the American IPA.
Yeah, it was
7.2%,
really,
I think. Something like that.
Yeah, we drank through those so quick, man, because I didn't make a bunch. It was like a really small run of beer, and I want to say the band consumed most of it. Adam,
how did that all come together? Yeah.
So Adam D, our guitar player slash producer, like kind of the heart and soul of the band, for better or for worse for some people. he's a genius. He's an actual genius. But he is a massive, massive beer guy. Like probably the biggest beer snob I've ever met in my life. And they approached him about it and he like okayed it. And from that, they were actually going to continue on, but there was a lot of miscommunication. But yeah, it's all Adam D. And then since that time, Adam has been, every time I would see him the past year or so in tour, every time I would see him, he had a book about brewing in his hand. So that dude is actually like hardcore studying.
He's up brewing, next.
And he's planning on, yeah, that's like, I think that's his backup plan for life, is becoming the total beer snob that he is. And he's like one of those guys that will drink IPAs that will like make your mouth pucker. Like he loves like the West Coast, like hoppy IPAs.
That is correct.
Speaking of which, I'm going to crack this grapefruit IPA.
I've had Adam on the podcast before, and he did tell me that he enjoys the West Coast more than the haze craze that's going on.
Yeah, and he's like a snob about it. Like he I'll be drinking a beer with him back when I could drink beer, and he'll just be like, "Meh, tastes syrupy." I'm like, "Wow, this is so good." He's like, "No, it's not good." Then I'll try the shit that he likes, and I'm like, "God damn, dude,
the bitter."
Yeah, just like meh. The one beer I miss more than anything is sour beers, though. I would say sour beers were my favorite for a while there, and I know that went through a little bit of a phase. I'm not sure where that is in the beer.
It's still super, super happening. The blended barrel aged sours.
I miss totally that shit, happening. Man.
So good, but there's some gluten free up there for sure.
Yeah, I'm still kind of like, because for a while I just didn't even care about beer. I just stopped caring about it and switched over to like rum and tequila and which was dangerous and all in itself. But yeah, I'm only just recently this past summer taking it seriously, where I'm trying to like seek out good gluten-free beer. So
it'd be really cool to make a new Killswitch collab, but make it a gluten-free brew so that you can enjoy it as well.
I'd love that, man. Maybe I'll have to take that on my own shoulders to do that, because I'm, like I was saying earlier, like sorghum beer has kind of become my favorite. It's just got this like maltiness to it that I love.
Awesome. Well, what style brew would you want to make, and what would you call it?
Oh man, shit! I don't know. I ain't even thought about this shit. I'd love to do a sour beer, because a sour gluten free beer would be great. Maybe even a blueberry sour, because a friend of mine actually, who owns a brewery called Proclamation, it's in Rhode Island. That guy, he was the kind of guy that would come to the party with his homebrew and have people try it. And he did a blueberry IPA when he was really young, in his early phases. And that blew my mind. I thought it was incredibly delicious. Now he's like, he went from like homebrew to like huge. He's got a huge factory now in Rhode Island, and he's doing great. But yeah, so that was the first blueberry beer I ever had that I liked that wasn't too sweet. Because I feel like blueberry beers, they're hit or miss. I don't like anything too sweet. It drives me nuts. So maybe a blueberry sour, and what would I call it? No, I'm not that clever. I don't know. I have to think about it. I'd have to sit with it. If it was a Killswitch one, though, yeah, let me think. I don't know.
Let it brew. Yeah. brew on the idea.
Yeah.
I am very lucky that I get to do these interviews, and leading up to them, doing the prep work, wondering if the artist is actually going to connect. How is that?
This is, all right, so this grapefruit IPA from Ghostfish is one of my favorites.
And awesome. I love them. Yeah.
Tastes like an actual IPA. Like, it makes me like happy, because it feels like I'm not gluten free at the moment. I love this beer. Love, love, love it.
Very cool. Wondering if the artist is going to connect. I get that little vibe that I get before stepping on stage. That's how I fill my void.
Oh, I love it. Cause you care, though. That's good, though.
You have to care. So
yeah.
How do you fill the void of not being able to tour, not getting onto that stage, not getting that feeling? What have you been doing?
Yeah, it's pretty much all exercise based, which is why I'm so skinny these days. So I live in the Catskill Mountains. I live in Woodstock, New York. So I'm in the heart. I actually live in a park, the Catskill National Park. So for me, it's hiking, kayaking, getting on my bike, taking psychedelic mushrooms and big, huge fires in my backyard. That's kind of my thing that gets me going. And the mushrooms too aren't just for fun. That's actually my medicine. I microdose for my anxiety and depression, and it's a wonderful medicine if you know what you're doing. It's great. Mm. So those are kind of my go-tos for sure. And I've got an extremely supportive and amazing woman by my side. So she helps me out a lot too. She's also very highly intuitive because she comes from a crazy place and has mental illness as well. So we're actually good for each other. It's not like some situations with that, when people are both crazy, it doesn't work. We're actually really supportive of each other. So all hails to her as well. She's great.
Absolutely. Especially during this time when we're actually home so long.
Yeah. It's taken our relationship to a whole other level. I gotta be honest with you. Like, my world is shit professionally right now, 'cause I'm not doing anything, but my personal life is the best it's ever been. So I'm stoked because of that. That is one of the benefits of being home and like settling into like a home routine. It's been nice.
Especially you guys are out so often for so long.
Yeah.
For many, many years in a row. It's probably the longest you've ever been home.
Yeah.
Aside from your break from the band.
I'll be honest with you, as hard as it's been, there have been moments where because I can look out my front window here and see deer, bear, raccoon, wow, coyote, fox. Like, we're in the park. So there are moments where I was watching autumn come on, and it was just, I mean, I would get teary eyed, be like, this is fucking beautiful, because I'm so not used to sitting still. It became very meditative to like get up in the middle of the night and look at the stars, because you can see the Milky Way above my house, like, wow, at night. So the little things like that have been incredible, and I definitely will remember that when I'm back out on the road and I'm tired and I want to complain. I'll remember this year, if nothing else, try to pull the positive out of it, and that's definitely part of it.
You mentioned working out. Are you keeping vocally in shape? I guess you have to.
You know what's funny? I haven't for a long... I actually took a good, solid 3-month hiatus. Like, just...
Really?
No,
wow.
Yeah, nothing. Which was nice, because I've been getting back into the routine, and I just did vocals for, done a few paid gigs for bands that I admire and like. They've asked me to, and I've accepted, and I've worked on some secret projects, and getting back into it now is just like, it's fun. I was screaming the other night and like in my living room, just like, yeah, this feels really good. Yeah, and I actually have a punk band called The Weapon. So I've been writing, yep, a lot of punk rock stuff, which is more of a yelling vibe. And man, yelling is fun. I want to do more of that shit. You know, it's the difference between, growling and singing and then, shouting and yelling. Like, the yelling, mm-hmm, I'm doing, it's so satisfying. And it's coming from a really cool spot where I can do it for hours. So I've been really enjoying demoing New Weapon, and yeah, it's cool, man. I mean, I miss performance like a motherfucker, but still being able to do this kind of shit and has been fun. I've been writing electronic music too, just and ambient music and industrial. Just, I take my creativity and just filter it into like anything I can to like, and maybe that's part of it too. Maybe that's part of me staying sane, is just writing like anything. Outside of the genre of Killswitch is really fun. It is. Because
you have to get that out. You got to stay creative. It can't stay inside you.
No.
It'll just make you explode.
And then we have a new Times of Grace record in the bag, which I'm proud to say is not metalcore at all. We've definitely turned the corner with that project and become more of a artistic sounding band, mixing rock, blues, alternative, post-metal, I don't even, whatever they call that. It's a lot of effects on the guitars. And
I love post-metal.
Oh, yeah. So, like, it's definitely more of the creative vibe. So Times of Grace has been really nice to have in the back pocket. And I'm super proud of what Adam and I did. It's a totally different style from what Times of Grace is known for, and 100% from what Killswitch is known for. So that's another thing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. But, having two bands that sound exactly the same is pointless. So.
It's boring, yeah. And I think with the first Times of Grace release, people compared it because it was similar and it was the two of us doing it. But the few songs on that last record, The Hymn of Broken Man, that were different. We embraced that. We're like, all right, we want to do more bluesy acoustic. We want to do more post-metal. We want to do more straight-up rock. Unapologetically just do a rock song. So it's fun, man. It's so fun to just step out of the genre and just do whatever you feel.
And not feel like trapped or limited.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're writing, because I can see that.
Yeah, with Killswitch, there's like, a lot of resistance. I push, they push back, and trying to stay within the, I don't even want to use the word confines, but it does feel confining sometimes, of our sound. I've been the guy pushing constantly to like, oh, let's do something a little different. And the guy's like, yeah, but fans. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Fans. How about, have you guys discussed, have you done, I tried to find it to see if it did happen. I'm sorry if it did. A live stream. Is that something that Killswitch is interested in?
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. And there was a lot of debate in the beginning about, you know, if we're able to do it, how would we do it where we would feel comfortable? And I think initially there was a lot of guys who were just like, we can't do what we do on stage on a live stream. So it's kind of pointless. And I think we finally turned the corner as of like the past week of like, okay, at some point we're going to do this soon. And I'm actually, you know, in retrospect, glad we waited because everybody's doing it, for example. And I like the fact that we've kind of waited. So now when we do it, we're going to approach it a very different way. So
You can see what everyone else did.
That'll be in the 2021 rather, but it'll be worth the wait for our fans, I think.
Very cool. Very cool. So you can see what everyone else did and you can see what mistakes they made and you guys can make it better.
I feel like the more bands are doing it, the cooler it's getting. I've seen bands like, what the hell is the name of that band that did it recently? Oh, it's going to drive me nuts, but they took the Zoom idea and put their fans on a Zoom around.
Yeah, it was super dupe. It was a Metallica, though.
Maybe Metallica did, but there was a smaller band that did it recently. It was the first time I saw it, and I was like, wow. So maybe they did take it from Metallica.
Maybe.
But,
or maybe Metallica took it from that.
Yeah, maybe. But I was like, wow, that's a really cool idea.
You know? Very cool.
So yeah, we'll see. But that talk has happened, and it's something we are eventually going to do.
Awesome. One last question. It probably doesn't happen to you because you're working out a lot. You are very
well
in control.
Working out, but yeah, I don't go to a gym. I'm not a gym rat or anything. I'm a nature hippie punk, you know, cyclist guy. But yeah, go ahead.
What is your hangover cure?
It's funny because I had one today. I drank three margaritas back to back, and I was at a friend's bar. We were, you know, all socially distancing, but it was like, things might shut down again here in New York. So we were like kind of partying last night and I woke up feeling like hell. So I just usually make the greasiest thing I can find with my diet is really tough to get greasy. Cause I don't really have a lot of animal products that I eat, but, I did what the hell? We had a really fatty coconut soup, which I know people are probably going to laugh at that, but made it really spicy. And then, I had a good solid coffee with chocolate, so caffeine really helps, and then tons and tons of water, and then so eat fatty stuff, drink all the fluids, and then go back to bed and then wake up and drink beer.
yes I love it. See, that sounds perfect to me. Jesse, thank you so much for taking some time to sit down with me, talk about your life, music, and of course craft beer. I greatly appreciate it, and I'm super stoked to see that live stream, hear that new Times of Grace, hear the Weapon. Lots of cool stuff going on. I love it. Cheers.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it. Cheers to you, man.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. What an awesome human. I had such an excellent time hanging out with Jesse, and I hope that he had just as much fun as I did. As I mentioned, I've been a fan for quite some time, so this was very, very cool, and I was very excited about it, and I was not disappointed in the least. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should most definitely go and subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. But not only that, you should take the time to rate it and write a review, because if you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops podcast. Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming at you this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, And my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.